The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Welcome to Sports Radio New York, a network of New York sports talk shows heard on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. The following program is brought to you by Sports Radio New York.
Good evening and welcome to the talk of New York sports on this Sunday night, the third day of August 2014. This Hall of Fame weekend in Canton, Ohio. This is after we celebrated last weekend in Cooperstown, New York. We are part of the network of shows on Sports Radio NY, broadcasting from WGBB 1240 AM in Freeport, Long Island, New York. I'm Bill Donahue. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is right across the way over there. We've got another fine show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we've got the star of the 1978 World Series for the New York Yankees. He stepped in quite adequately in place of the injured Willie Randolph. Brian Doyle will join us tonight, and in the second half, we'll welcome in the most decorated U.S. female gymnast in history, a member of the storied Magnificent Seven, the legendary team that captured gold in Atlanta in 1996. Shannon Miller will be with us. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, cleverly titled The Talk of New York Sports. Well, you'll find sports information, trivia, sports and history, show information, and more. So stop by, give us a look. More importantly, give us a like. You can now also follow us on Twitter at Talk of NY Sports. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportsradioNY.com. Well, my first guest was a former Major League Baseball infielder. He played for the New York Yankees and the Oakland A's. Played primarily as a second baseman. Although a reserve for most of his career, Doyle starred in the 1978 World Series for the world champion Yankees. And I welcome to the talk of New York sports tonight, Brian Doyle. Brian, welcome to the show.
Bill, thank you very much. It's good to be on.
It's great having you, Brian. Now, Brian, who did you root for growing up? Who were some of your influences, favorite players?
Well, from Kentucky, everybody would think Cincinnati Reds, but
that's what I would think. Yeah.
No, Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris. It was huge. I was a huge Yankee fan, and then still rooted for the Yankees when my older brother Denny started playing for the Phillies, and I was only in the seventh grade. So, but I had always been a Yankee fan.
Perfect. Perfect answer. Okay. Now, you were drafted by the Texas Rangers, 1972 amateur draft. Before you played a game for the Rangers, they traded you to the Yankees in exchange for a well-known guy named Sandy Alomar. You joined the Yankees in 78. Now, what a year to join, right?
Yeah, really. It was really something. I know that it was hard on me in the fact that for whatever reason the Yankees AAA team was in Tacoma, Washington, and that year I was brought up five times, so I was back and forth five times, and that's literally across country.
Right. Yeah. What a trip that was. Now. Let's take a look at some of the ball players on that club. First of all, the guy that that you subbed for, let's talk about Willie Randolph.
Willie is still a very close friend, consummate professional, and what a second baseman. And you know, when I was traded, I was really upset because I was supposed to be the next Rangers second baseman. And then I'm traded, and I'm going, uh-oh, I'll never get to the big leagues now. And but Willie is not just a good ball player, what a good man.
Yeah, definitely. And, all-time favorite around here in New York, definitely. Now, one of the Hall of Famers that you played with, he won the Rolaids Relief Man of the Year in 1978. He led the American League with 27 saves. What about Goose Gossage?
extremely fun teammate, and it was lights out when I got up there when he came in. Just a tremendous, tremendous competitor, and he was the 110% guy. When he came in, it was all that he had.
Now, this wasn't a guy also, Brian, as we spoke about. I spoke to Raleigh Fingers at one point, too. These weren't guys that came in to pitch to one batter.
No,
these were guys that came in and pitched four innings.
It was at the day and age where when you needed the game and the game was close, they came in and pitched as long as needed. It wasn't two hitters and good night. It was sometimes three, four innings.
Exactly. So they earn their keep, definitely, the guys out
they
of the pen.
They definitely earn their keep. That's
yeah.
right. That's right.
And now, this next guy, he won the Cy Young Award. This was one of the best years by anybody in baseball history. Won the Cy Young by unanimous vote, 273 and two-thirds innings, 25-3 he went, 248 strikeouts, 1.74 ERA, 9 shutouts. Of course, we're talking about the Gator, Ron Guidry.
It was an amazing year, amazing game. My first major league hit was when he pitched the Angels and struck out 18.
Amazing.
And I was playing second base, and it was an unbelievable game. But, you know, Gator would come in from the bullpen after warming up and literally say, I need one today. Or he'd go, you know what, guys? I feel like I need three today. And that's how he was. And 25-3, unbelievable record, unbelievable ERA. And he kept us in, along with another guy that a lot of people might forget about, but he was the first Puerto Rican 20-game winner that the Yankees had, and that was Ed Figueroa. Those two guys kept us going when things were, 14 games back, all of that. But Gator was unbelievable.
People forget about Ed Figueroa, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, here's another Hall of Famer. Some might forget about him on this ball club, too. Jim Catfish Hunter.
Jim was, Jim and I were roommates. Those were the days that you had roommates. And Cat, being from North Carolina and me from Kentucky, he took me under his wing. And most of the road trips, I was his roommate. And when you have a rookie and wanting to learn, there wasn't a better person to have as a mentor than Jimmy. He was awesome.
Here's a unique personality in baseball. Albert Sparky Lyle.
In 77, he wins the Cy Young Award, and Puff, which was Greg Nettles, said he went from Cy Young to sayonara.
And,
and what a wonderful guy. So much fun in the clubhouse. And even though he wasn't pitching that year, he just hung in there, supported everybody, and a good teammate.
Okay, now the captain led the team, and no one would expect the catcher to lead the team with 183 hits.
Well, let me tell you, Thurman was probably one of the best athletes. The two best athletes I had ever seen or known was Gator, with Guidry, and then Thurman Munson. And I know all of New York would remember yesterday was the 35th anniversary of Thurman
right.
Passing.
We're going to talk about that. Yep.
And he was the consummate professional. If he heard somebody complain, he would just say one word, retire. this guy played with so much pain and so much heart. I know New York remembers, but the whole sporting world needs to remember Thurman Munson and what he did and how he led that team.
Definitely. Well, as I said, we're going to talk a little bit about Thurman in a little bit. Reggie Jackson, he was tied with Nettles with 27 home runs. He led the team with 97 RBIs. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on Reggie Jackson.
Well, you know, I was very, very blessed in that with Catfish, now Goose, and Thurman, I got to play with three Hall of Famers.
Exactly.
And it was literally, as everybody knows, when the brighter the spotlight, the more Reg shine.
Yeah.
He loved the spotlight, and he came through during the spotlight. When you have somebody like that, it's just good to have that type of offensive pop in your lineup.
Definitely. Now, speaking of offensive pop, the man who led the team in batting average was Sweet Lou Piniella. Now, did you have any idea, Brian, that he would turn out to be a successful manager, aside from being such a great ball player?
Most definitely. The guy thought, ate, slept baseball. And you know what? I can still see him in the mirror in the clubhouse. He was always in his stance in the mirror, checking everything out. He knew pitching. He knew the game, and yes, I knew he would be a good manager.
Okay.
Very headsy guy.
Yeah. Okay. Now, speaking of manager, you had three of them in 78. You had Dick Houser, of course. You had Billy Martin, you had Lem, the Hall of Famer Bob Lemon. Now, we're speaking to Brian Doyle tonight of the Yankees, the great year he had in 1978 in the World Series. Were you around, Brian, during the dugout confrontation in Fenway Park between Billy and Reggie?
I missed it 2 days.
Oh, okay.
thank God I missed it.
Okay. Now,
yeah.
Did you play for all three of those managers?
I sure did.
Okay.
I sure did.
Now, give us your thoughts on Billy. I always asked the guys who played for Billy their thoughts on Billy, because some of them have, do they run the gamut?
Yeah, well, of course. I went with Billy to Oakland also. And
right, you did. Yeah, I noticed that when I was doing my homework.
And he, one of the smartest managers. And he did a lot of managing from his gut, and was very successful with it. I think everybody, that loves the Yankees, knows about the Yankees, and knows Billy, that, when he was on his game, how can I say this? When he hadn't partied a lot,
right? Okay,
he was really, really awesome, and thank goodness when he wasn't on his game, you had a team of unbelievable veterans that knew how to play the game
that picked him up, sort of.
That's right.
Okay,
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I loved Billy. We had a very unique relationship, and one of the reasons I went to Oakland with him. So I loved him, but just like every one of us, me included, we have our faults, and unfortunately, one of those faults were for him was it was tough.
Right,
it was really tough.
And for those of you who don't know, in 78, Billy resigned in the fallout over that dugout altercation that he had with Reggie in Fenway Park in Boston. Reggie, I guess he sort of dogged it after a fly ball in Boston, and when he came in after that inning, he and Billy had a public altercation that was caught on the TV cameras. I guess it was broken up by Elston Howard in the dugout, and the fallout from that caused Billy to resign, and that was the downfall right there.
And it was. I know that we had gone to Kansas City. I had been called up just a couple of days afterwards, and there in the hotel in the lobby of Kansas City is when Billy resigned.
Yeah. Now, how about the Bucky Dent home run? Were you there for that, Brian?
I sure was.
Okay.
It was a very wonderful game. I got to I started in that game, and it was really cool because my older brother had just a couple of years prior played that same position for the Red Sox, and it was a very unique and wonderful game for me, and just a personal thing, playing at the same place and standing at the same place where my older brother had played. And then Torrey hung a slider, and Bucky hit it into the net, and it was unbelievable, that one-game playoff.
Amazing. One of the most famous home runs in the history of baseball, folks. In July, the Yankees were 14.5 games behind the Boston Red Sox, rallied in the second half of the season to finish in a tie with Boston. The Yankees were victorious in that one-game playoff because of Bucky Dent's three-run home run. They went ahead in the seventh inning. And it was just an amazing, amazing sight. Bill White's call of that home run will go down in history. And, of course, Brian Doyle was there for that home run. And, as we said, one of the most famous shots in history. Over the Green Monster, into the screen. And you could see it on YouTube. And, of course, Brian was there. And just an amazing moment. And it gave Bucky Dent a famous middle name.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. in New England, which we can't really mention tonight. But
That's right.
But it's amazing. Yes. Now we'll head to the World Series in 1978. Willie Randolph suffered an injury. And what made them decide to go with you, Brian? Tell us about that.
Well, they just, in fact, Bill, it was, I knew I was going to have to play in the playoff because Willie was hurt. Then they had to get special permission from Kansas City and the commissioner for me to be even on the roster because I was called up during when the expansion of the roster went to 40 man.
Okay.
And so I had to get special permission and only knew a day before that I was going to play against Kansas City. And then during the World Series, it was only a couple hours before the World Series that started in L.A. That I knew I was going to be eligible because the same permission had to be given from had to be gotten from the Los Angeles Dodgers and the commissioner's office again. So my job, they knew I could catch the ball, they knew I could turn the double play, and I wasn't going to hurt them at all defensively.
Right.
And that's how I got into the playoffs in the World Series.
What they didn't know is that in the sixth game you were going to hit .438.
That's true. Bucky and I had had a wonderful, wonderful offensive series. We had a very good defensive series, as, of course, did Nettles. You know, a lot of guys had a wonderful World Series.
Definitely.
I was just fortunate enough that hitting eighth, they gave me pitches to hit.
Right. For the record, folks, 438, 7 hits and 16 at-bats, 1 double, 4 runs scored, 2 RBIs. The Yankees went to their second straight World Series victory, and we're speaking to that man, Brian Doyle, tonight. Now, in 79, The Yankees lost their stronghold on the AL East, probably because of one of the great tragedies in Major League Baseball history. They lost their captain, Thurman Munson, so tragically. And tell us about that, Brian. Tell us about the impact on the ball club and just the general feeling being around the Yankee club at that time.
Well, we had an off day, and Thurman had his own plane, and had just gotten a new plane that was a little more powerful, and he had gotten it. I know we were in Oakland, and he asked if Catfish and I wanted to go up and do some touch and goes. It was an off day, and we said no. We were going to play golf on the off day. Then we go back to New York, and Thurman flew home to Canton, and that's why he had the plane. During that off evening, I took my wife and another couple to the Broadway, to a Broadway show, Annie, and I walked up to get my tickets, and the ticket guy said, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Doyle, and I said, well, you don't have my tickets, and he goes, oh, you haven't heard, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, man.
So I sat my wife and the couple, and I said, told my wife, the guy wanted to see me out in the booth, and so I just walked in the booth, and he told me. And I was devastated, and went back and did not tell my wife. Sat through Annie. I know she was thinking, why is he crying through Annie? But then it was afterwards, and our babysitter was frantic because everybody was calling. And it's hard to even put into words not only the loss, for Diane and Michael and, well, the whole family. It was all of us on the team was numb for a very long time. And when you lose someone that is a great leader, not a good leader, a great leader that knew everybody on the team and how they were supposed to perform, who had the mental attitude on the baseball field, there's no gray areas. You do it one way, and that's full tilt. Everybody respected him, and even as a player, a lot of times he didn't have to even say anything. It was his look that would make guys give a little bit more. It was just a numbing time for a very long time. And I know we wanted to go out and win, but there was still, you could just feel it. The team was out trying to win, but still just going through the motions.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was devastating. That's the only word I can really say is devastating.
Well, that's understandable, Brian. That's very, very, very well told.
He not only a good man, he was a great family man, and I miss him today, and I have all kinds of pictures in my man cave of I respect him very, very much.
Understandable. And it's understandable why the Yankees had the season they did that year.
Well, he would be another... if he could have played a couple more years, I know I would have been fortunate enough to have played with four Hall of Famers.
Definitely.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we're speaking to Brian Doyle tonight, and Brian, we thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to spend it with us tonight.
Well, I feel honored that you had me on your show, and just thank you very much.
Well, it's been great reminiscing about those great Yankee clubs of the late 70s and the great names like Jackson, Guidry, Munson, and, of course, Doyle.
And, I don't know. My name doesn't need to be with those guys. I was just blessed to be able to play with them and learn from them.
Well, you certainly were blessed, definitely. And thanks for being with us, Brian.
All right. Thank you.
Brian Doyle, ladies and gentlemen. Well, next up in the second half, we'll talk to gold medal-winning gymnast from the Atlanta Olympics in 1996, Shannon Miller. Please stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Sports Radio New York on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
Check out the Sports Radio New York network of shows every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. Call in to our live shows at 631-888-8811. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio NY. And be sure to check out all past shows online at sportsradiony.com. And now, back to the talk of New York sports with Bill Donahue.
All right, we're back with the talk of New York sports on Sports Radio NY, WGBB, Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you on this Football Hall of Fame game day in Canton, Ohio. The Giants versus the Bills, they're on the field right now, about a month until we kick off the 2014 season. Well, my next guest hails from Edmond, Oklahoma. She was the 1993 and 1994 World All-Around Champion, the 1996 Olympics Balance Beam Gold Medalist, and the 1995 Pan Am Games All-Around Champion, and a member of the gold medal-winning Magnificent Seven team at the Atlanta Olympics that captivated the country and the world. She is the winner of a combined total of 16 world championships and the Olympic medals between 1991 and 1996, and ranks as the most decorated gymnast in U.S. history. She was also the most successful American athlete at the 1992 Barcelona Games, winning five medals altogether. I'd like to welcome to the talk of New York sports tonight, Shannon Miller. Shannon, good evening.
Good evening. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're so welcome, and it's a pleasure to have you with us. Well, at the age of nine, you and your mom traveled to Moscow to participate in a gymnastics camp, Shannon. Now,
we did. I did.
I'd like to ask you how this training helped you out, and if you remember that, give us a little background on the training.
Yeah, I do remember many parts of it. This wasn't even a time I was competing yet. I wasn't a part of a competitive team. I was doing recreational gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
But this opportunity kind of came to us to go to a clinic over in Moscow and train with the Russian gymnasts. And for me, it was this kind of eye-opening experience where I realized my body type was actually really great for gymnastics. I was this kind of shy, scrawny little girl. I wasn't, didn't have a ton of self-esteem and confidence, but I felt really good when I was doing gymnastics. And I found out that I could truly pursue this amazing sport if I just really worked hard. It didn't have to be a pure natural talent. I didn't have to be the most flexible or the strongest. But if I worked really hard, I could probably be a pretty good gymnast. So it was a really cool experience for me.
Sounds good. Okay. Now, who were some of the athletes you looked up to as a youngster, Shannon? Did you follow any other sports?
Well, I watched basketball with my dad, and so Larry Bird and Charles Barkley and Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan. So all those guys were like, oh my goodness, they're just amazing. So the exact opposite of gymnastics as far as height and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as in my sport, the girls that I looked up to were not the ones that anyone would know their name. They weren't famous. I didn't really watch gymnastics growing up. I was too busy doing it. So
okay. It
was the older girls that were in my gym. I looked up to them. I saw them train hard. I saw them bring home trophies. I thought that was really awesome. So I wanted to follow in their footsteps.
Okay. Now, talk about a little bit the road that led to Barcelona. I know you were in some competitions with Svetlana Buginskaya, to mm-hmm. name one. But let's talk about the road leading up to Barcelona.
Well, for me, it was long road in some ways. I started gymnastics when I was 5 years old, started competing at 9 years old. But once I started competing, it was a fairly fast track. I became elite in my second year of competition, started competing internationally at 11 years old. So that was my first international competition, and found out I loved it. I loved being able to travel and see the world and compete with these other amazing gymnasts. And I remember the first international competition that I ever won. I was 11 or 12 years old, and it was the most amazing thing. I saw the American flag being raised, and I heard the sound of my national anthem. And I remember going home from that competition a completely different athlete, and I knew that the Olympics was exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to see that flag being raised on the biggest stage possible. And, of course, for gymnasts, that's the Olympic Games. And,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't one of those kids that at 5 years old said, oh, I want to be on the Olympic team. It wasn't until that moment that I decided this is what I have to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that must be a great feeling, definitely. Now, in Barcelona in 1992, you missed out on the gold by a really close margin. You lost to one of the unified teams. Now, your coach thought there might be a problem with the judging.
Well, my coach doesn't.
Right? Now,
I don't know that. Well, my personal coach, I don't think did. I think that might have been more kind of the head coach of the team.
Okay.
I think for me and my personal coach, which was Steve Nuno, our whole thing was I was so excited to be competing because, for those that were old enough to remember that time, I actually broke my elbow 4 months prior to the Olympic Games. Actually, it was 4 months prior. So for me to be competing on the Olympic team was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Career could have been over very easily. So to be competing to win a bronze with the team, to win a silver in the all-around, that's all we could kind of think of was winning the silver versus losing the gold. And so looking back, you're like, oh, maybe if I wouldn't have, put my toe there or maybe if I, extra little hop there. But, it's kind of the should have, would have, could have been. And I think for me, it did help me stay in the sport because it helped me realize there was so much more that I wanted to do and I needed to do in the sport. And that kind of helped me stay around for another 4 years to be able to compete in Atlanta with my team there. So, it's kind of things happen for a reason. And actually, Tatiana Gutsu and I, Tatiana, she won the gold, and we became good friends. So it was a great experience.
You still competed in every event, though, in Barcelona, didn't you?
I did. And yeah. For me, anyone that knows me knows that's my goal all the time, mm-hmm. is compete in the most events I can and really compete to the best of my ability to try to get the highest score possible. So for me to make all four of the event finals and to be able to hit every routine that I competed throughout every day of those Olympic Games was my gold medal, was my personal gold medal.
Okay. We're speaking with Shannon Miller tonight. Now, in the years after that, you started competing in events against the girls that you would later become teammates with in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
like Dominique Dawes and Dominique Mochiano, correct?
That's right. Well,
yeah.
Of course, Dominique Dawes and Carrie Strug were also on the team with me in Barcelona as well.
Ah, okay. Now, let's talk about the road to Atlanta now. Didn't injuries creep in before that too, Shannon?
They did. You know, I always seem to get injured at the most inopportune times, but I think that happens to every athlete. It's never a good opportunity to get injured. For me, you know, the road between 92 and 96 was a little bumpy as far as, you know, I had a growth spurt, if you can call 4 inches.
You know, yeah, I would.
A growth spurt.
Yeah.
But, you know, I gained a total of 6 inches and 30 pounds between 1992 and 1996. And so that changes your training a little bit. Just the age changes your training a little bit. I don't think I was injured anymore during the latter years. It just, again, I was competing in much bigger, more important competitions as my career went on. I did injure my wrist pretty severely prior to the 96 Olympics, and that was one of my most difficult injuries, because it was one of those that was just that lingering injury just never would quite heal. And so you just came to a point where you've got to decide, are you going or are you not going, and kind of work through the pain.
Yeah, okay. Now, in Atlanta, while I was doing my homework, I saw that for some of the younger fans who are listening, may not been around in 1996.
You make me feel old.
Believe me, no one's older than me. Didn't you get chalk dust in your eyes during warm-ups?
Oh, I did. You're right.
Yeah.
You did your homework.
Yeah.
I remember that. There was a couple of odd things. I got chalk dust in my eye before I went up on bars.
I know that would have bugged me if I got chalk dust in my eyes.
It's one of those moments where you say, really? Are you kidding with this? there was also a balance beam during the compulsory round. So this is the first competition of those Olympics. And we had this roll on the balance beam where you had to roll on your shoulder on the balance beam.
Uh-huh.
And there was a fly on the beam. And I remember in that instant thinking, there's no way there's a fly on the beam during the Olympic Games. This is not, how does this happen?
There's no fly allowed in here.
Yeah. There's no bugs at the Olympics. Come on.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always one thing. It's one thing or another, and you just kind of have to deal with it.
Man, okay. Now, a couple of things. Now, Carrie Strug's foot injury after the vault. Tell us a little bit about that and what happened and how everybody overcame that adversity.
Well, it was really a very, you know, chaotic moment.
Yeah.
It was very, you know, our perspective from down on the floor is very different than viewers seeing the coverage at home, because mm-hmm. we don't see what the camera is seeing. So we're kind of down in the pit. So when she vaulted, we at first didn't even see it kind of landing. We couldn't really tell until everyone kind of flooded the floor and went up on the podium, and then it was kind of, oh, okay, what happened? And then Carrie was kind of separated from us. We were, you know, told very sternly to make sure we march out of the arena, get ready for the awards ceremony. There's this timeline, and you're going quick. And I remember there was a moment there, though, where there were six of us standing there. They're yelling at us to get on the floor. And we just stood there, and not one of us moved our feet. And we were not walking out on the floor without Carrie. And luckily, Bella came up holding Harry at that moment. And it was just really a very surreal moment. I think we had so many things flooding through our minds at that time. You kind of want to laugh, you want to cry, you want to think of all of those people that helped you get to that point. But then at the same time, you want to think about, you know, okay, I have to compete 2 days later, so I've got to get refocused. So there's just this flood of emotion and thoughts as you're standing there on the podium. But at the end of the day, it was just an incredible, incredible team to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I was wondering, Shannon, was speaking to Shannon Miller from talking about the Atlanta Olympics tonight. Was there any difference for you winning the Olympics in the USA versus winning on foreign soil?
I think so. I think just the immediacy, the immediate impact that you saw. I think just competing, you know, much less winning, but just competing, walking into the Georgia Dome and just having the entire crowd, it seemed. They were just all chanting USA and, you know, just all of this red, white, and blue and these American flags waving. And he just felt the support of so many. And when you started to get nervous and scared and just plain terrified, what if I fall? What if I let these people down? I remember making a very conscious effort to think, you know what? What about the support that these people are offering me? And they're here to help us and carry us through this competition. And so it was kind of just to have that immediate support right there. And then, of course, the immediate gratification of the applause and just the thunderous, roaring applause was incredible.
Something would make me, Shannon, want to win in a foreign country. I don't know why. I don't know. I was thinking about it, and something would make me want to win in another country. Maybe to show them how great America is. Do you get what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah.
I think it kind of works both ways.
Yeah.
You want to win on foreign soil, but you also want to win on home soil.
To stick it to them, you know?
The funny thing about gymnastics, and I don't know if it's this way in all sports or not, but for gymnastics, you really do become a family with all of the international athletes. And so you see each other at different competitions, and even with language barriers, you just kind of become family, and it's more you against the equipment than it is you against the judges or you against the other athlete, especially in gymnastics when you can't do anything to affect the other person. So it's kind of a family atmosphere, even though you're being competitive and you all want to win, and that's great, but...
I didn't mean the athletes. I meant the crowd.
Oh, sure. Well, what I found is the crowd likes good gymnastics.
Yeah.
They really like good gymnastics, and I think I like that about our sport as well. You know, at some point, you always root for your country, you always root for your team, but at some point it rises above that, especially at the Olympic level. And you say, you know what? That was a great routine. That was amazing athleticism.
And again, I've never been in the Olympics, so, you know, who knows? But that's neither here nor there. But continuing on, you also won the balance beam, which is wonderful.
Well, it was a pretty amazing moment for me. And, of course, that was my last event of my Olympic career, last 95. My Olympic career, and it was a bit of a rocky road for me. You know, I started out with, you know, the gold medal with the team and didn't do as well as I would have liked during the all-around, and I kind of got thrown into vault, taking Carrie's spot, and I think the world knows I probably shouldn't have been in their vaulting. Carrie should have been in their vaulting for sure, but I wanted to do her proud. You know, if I was going to have to take her place, I wanted to do my best, and did not do my best. And so beam was kind of where it all came down to, and that's a bit terrifying. But to really be able to just perform the routine that I trained for 15 years of my life and to kind of hit it at that right moment was incredible.
Definitely. Now, you've been named to the USA Gymnastics Hall of Fame, the U.S. Olympic Hall of Fame, and the International Gymnastics Hall of Fame. And you're in the Hall of Fame twice, the United States Olympic Hall of Fame twice, as an individual and for the team.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
It's tremendous honors. I've been very blessed, and it's been just an amazing road. Sometimes you think back and you think, was that really my life? It's been amazing.
What a ride. Definitely. Now, after retiring, Shannon, you went back to school, which is definitely great.
Well, education was always a priority,
uh-huh.
Especially my family. My parents made sure from the beginning I understood grades come first, because that's your education, that is your life, and that's great that you want to do this gymnastics fit thing, but you could get injured or get the flu on the day of the competition, so this is your fallback. This is your foundation. And so immediately after I retired, I went back to my foundation, and that was my education.
Right, and you went to school.
Although I shouldn't say went back to. Because I was still taking part-time college courses while I was training.
You went to law school.
I did.
Yeah.
I did, yeah.
But you didn't.
Yeah, I went to Boston College.
Yeah.
For law school.
You didn't take the bar.
I haven't taken the bar, no. I went to law school out of, I got a marketing degree and an entrepreneurship degree, and one of my last courses was a business law class, and I had wanted to launch a company and also my foundation, and I realized how little I knew about the contracts I was already signing and had been signing for years, and I thought this is something that would be really beneficial, and I decided to kind of dive in, and I took the LSAT and thought, well, if I get a good enough score, I'll apply, and if I get in, great.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of it went from there, but other than maybe a semester or two where I thought I might practice, it was always about opening my company and foundation.
But your degree in marketing helped you with Shannon Miller Lifestyle.
It does. Well, I think
definitely,
the marketing,
right?
Entrepreneurship, and the law degree, they all help me every single day. And it's just been, this has kind of been another wonderful ride to be a part of helping women make their health a priority every day.
Tell us about Shannon Miller Lifestyle, Shannon.
This is a company that is just such a passion of mine. It's kind of one of those, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And that's truly how I feel. It is our mission to help women make their health a priority. And that means, yes, fitness, nutrition, working motherhood or taking care of the critical illnesses. Of course, diabetes, heart disease, the number one killer of women. Obviously, most people know that I've been touched by cancer. I am a survivor, and so I do a lot with early detection and the diagnosis, treatment, survivorship, those types of things. But it's really just about making time for your own health and not feeling selfish about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, and you have children.
I do. I have two wonderful cuties. I have my little boy is 4 and a half, and our daughter is just over a year old.
And they keep you busy these days?
Oh, they keep me very busy, yes, but it's a wonderful busy.
Sure. Now, what current ventures are you working on now?
We have a lot going on, of course, with the company. I do quite a bit of speaking across the nation on motivation, also health and fitness, survivorship, a bunch of different topics. I'm always doing that. We're continuing to work with our partners. I work with Washington National Insurance about prevention, early detection, preparing for the unpreparable. I also work with Polar, and that's basically getting kids and women, everyone, active and helping them hold themselves accountable and really learn about heart rate and how that is a great indicator of how much activity they're getting each day. So we want to get people active. We also work with a number of other companies just helping people focus on their health, whether it's in general or it's focusing in certain areas, whether it's nutrition or fitness.
Definitely good stuff, Shannon. And where can people contact you if they're interested in the lifestyle or to get you to speak at their events or their company?
Sure. Well, certainly they can go to my website. Everything's on there, and it's a very informative website. We have lots of articles and fun stuff to look at and do. That's Shannon Miller. shannonmillerlifestyle.com. You can also get there if you just do shannonmiller.com. And, of course, I'm pretty active on Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest and all of that good stuff. So they can definitely check all that out there.
Sure. Okay. That's shannonmillerlifestyle.com, folks. Well, Shannon, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight, talking about your career and your journey and about your ventures. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to share part of your Sunday night with us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Shannon Miller, folks. Well, let's see. I'd like to talk to you folks about the Hall of Fame now. Like last week we had Cooperstown. We had Greg Maddux, a heavy emphasis on Atlanta. We had Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, Bobby Cox. Going in the player's side, also Frank Thomas, Chicago White Sox. The managers, three great managers going in, Bobby Cox, Tony La Russa, Joe Torre. Six great names going into the Baseball Hall of Fame last week, and all deserving. And I hope to be heading up there soon. This week, this weekend, we had players going into the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. As a matter of fact, the Hall of Fame game is going on right now in Canton, Ohio. The Buffalo Bills and the New York Giants. The class of 2014 in the Football Hall of Fame, consisting of Derek Brooks from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a linebacker out of Florida State from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going in. Also, Ray Guy, a punter, one of the few, if not the only, I'm not sure, punters out of Southern Mississippi, played for the Oakland Los Angeles Raiders going into the Football Hall of Fame. Claude Humphrey, a defensive end out of Tennessee State, played for the Atlanta Falcons, being enshrined. Walter Jones, a tackle out of Holmes Community College in Florida State from the Seattle Seahawks, being inducted. The great Andre Reed joining his battery mate, so to speak, Jim Kelly, wide receiver from Kutztown in Pennsylvania, from the Buffalo Bills and the Washington Redskins going in. And, of course, from the New York Giants, defensive end out of Texas Southern, Michael Strahan. Aeneas Williams, the cornerback safety out of Southern University from the Phoenix and the Arizona Cardinals. All being inducted into Canton, Ohio, having their bus presented to them this weekend at the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Also, we spoke about the Rule 5 draft that, yes, I know, four minutes, I know, don't worry. The Rule 5 draft, not too many people know what the Rule 5 draft is. Brian Doyle was sent from the Yankees to the Oakland Athletics via the Rule 5 draft. Nobody knows what the Rule 5 draft is. The Rule 5 draft basically is a draft that occurs each year in December at the annual winter meeting of general managers. The Rule 5 draft aims to prevent teams from stockpiling too many young players on their minor league affiliate teams when other teams would be willing to have them play in the majors. The Rule 5 draft is named for its place in the major league rules. Now, the Rule 4 draft, you didn't know there was a Rule 4 draft, is known as simply the draft. That's the amateur draft or first-year player draft. That's distinctly a different process which teams select high school and college players. The Rule 4 draft is the regular draft. Now, famous Rule 5 player draftees, Roberto Clemente, Jose Bautista, George Bell, Bobby Bonilla, Darrell Evans, players like that, famous Rule 5 players. 2 minutes now. Okay. R.A. Dickey, Dan Ugla, Manny Trio, Bip Roberts, Jeff Nelson. Those are famous Rule 5 players. So that's basically what the Rule 5 draft is. So I hope you understand that now. So when people say Rule 5 draft, now you could say I know what that means because Bill Donahue explained it to me on the Talk of New York Sports. So that's pretty much it. We're going to wrap up now. I'd like to thank you, and I thank you most sincerely from the bottom of my heart for joining me tonight on the Talk of New York Sports. I'd also like to thank my guests, Brian Doyle and Shannon Miller. I'd like to thank my engineer, Brian Graves, for reminding me that we have 1 minute left to go. And most of all, of course, I'd like to thank you once again for joining us. I'll be back with you to thank you again next Sunday night, August 10th at 9 o'clock. Hopefully we'll have manager of the Las Vegas 51s, Wally Backman, joining us, and we'll have a member of the Impossible Dream Boston Red Sox, Rico Petroselli. Till then, Bill Donahue, wishing you good evening, folks.
Necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.